Don't you never just sit there?
Oh, I don't know. It's quite fun, really.
What was that?
I don't know, but it was lovely.
This is ABC Feral Radio, and around Australia it's 1 p.m. except in Adelaide, where it's still Friday night. However, whatever the time, we'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Jill McKay, Peter Whitford, Angela Weber, Adam Bourne, Lance Curtis, Keith Scott, Drew Forsythe, Peter Smalley, and Genevieve Moy. Strict tempo music for dancing by Arthur Greenslade and the G-Men, with vocal refrain by Vaughn de Silverquin and Leg Break Molasses. Meanwhile, we're slightly out to lunch, man.
Come on, step on it, pal. What do you want?
Well, I'm making inquiries about becoming naturalized.
Oh, yeah? What are you?
Well, I'm British, actually.
Oh, actually, are we, my lord? Pretty ever so fine and dandy.
I beg your pardon?
Hey, Gwenny! Got any more Pongo application forms? We've got another little old Fotler Bloody Roy out here. All right, pal, what are your three main duties as an Australian citizen?
Well, I'm frightfully sorry, I haven't a clue.
Frightfully sorry, actually, your highness. Permit me to let your little booties, Pongo Prince. Listen, sport, there's three main rules for Pongos if you want to be a real Aussie. One, buy some soap. Two, use it. And three, stop whinging.
I'm very sorry, sir.
Okay, now, before I get you to sign this, you've got to answer a few questions. Do you now, or have you ever, worn socks and sandals to the beach?
Well,
have you?
No.
Have you or members of your family ever paddled in the surf with your dacks rolled up and a hanky on your head?
Certainly not.
All right, you miserable lily-white Pongo, this is a trick question. A Barbie is which of the following? One, a doll. Two, an outdoor luncheon type thing. Or three, a quiz show hostess. Now, think carefully.
Wait, it's all three, I think.
Okay, smarty pants, that ends the formal ceremony. Just sign here. Get it here, Pongo Features. Righto, raise your right hand. Now, repeat after me. I am a Pongo bastard.
I am a Pongo bastard.
What are you doing, Mr. Passacaglia?
Nothing, Mr. Dawkins, nothing. Very nice to meet you, sir. I hope you enjoy your adopted country. See you later now.
Keyboard Workshop. This week, Professor Eugen Crutch, senior lecturer in quasi-Gothic neomorphism at the Upper Civic Fine Arts Collectorate, talks about harpsichord maintenance.
Hello. At a recent symposium, I was asked to elaborate on the need for stricter piano caster control. Yet the dangers of harpsichords have been well known since their appearance in the 15th century. It is accepted that most orchestras will lose a musician or two each year through harpsichord misuse. It was recently brought to my attention that the Adelaide Philharmonic lost most of its string section as a result of an accident with an unroadworthy harpsichord. Handbrake failure and the inattention to the conductor's directions caused the lethal instrument to career across the concert hall, gathering speed and violinists as it went. Bravely, I am told, the orchestra continued, holding its ground and trying to ignore the shrieks and lamentations of wasted violinists. Pianos have caused similar disasters, especially due to the use of pneumatic casters, which render the instrument a silent and effective method of removing unwanted musicians. To the uninitiated, this may seem a cruel and savage way of keeping orchestra numbers down. Yet, in the world of music, only the fittest can survive. I'm Eugen Crutch. Thank you.
Welcome, dear. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Dame Deirdre.
Most glad you could make it to our quaint little get-together.
Oh, yes, how am I? Where can I put my coat?
I'll have Barwick taken. Barwick!
Mom.
The lady's coat, please.
Yes, Mom.
There you are.
Oh, thank you, Dame Deirdre. Now, if you'll just excuse me for a tick, I'll go over to the table for a little nibble.
Oh, we have servants for that sort of thing. Thomas!
Mom.
Mrs. Budwater would like something to eat.
Right away, Mom. There you go, madam.
Thank you, Thomas. There you are, Mrs. Budwater.
I only wanted some French onion dip, but surely there was no need to bring over the whole table.
The servants like to do their job very efficiently.
Oh, right. Oh, look, there's Nerida. I haven't seen her for weeks. I must have a word with her.
Oh, I wouldn't hear of it, my dear.
bracelets? Mum, talk to Nerida for Mrs. Budwater, would you please?
Yes, Mum.
There.
I could have talked to her myself.
Oh, now we shouldn't go straining ourselves, and we have servants who could do the work just as well, should we?
I suppose not. No. I thought perhaps you might show me around this exquisite home.
As I said, no need, Bradford.
Mum.
Show yourself around the house, will you?
Yes, Mum.
Mind you look at the tapestry near the stairwell on the second floor.
Dainty, Deirdre. You'll have to excuse me.
Warwick.
Mum.
Excuse yourself on Mrs. Budwallop's behalf, will you?
I want to go and enjoy myself.
My personal butler, James, will enjoy himself just for you, my dear.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Reginald! Make yourself sick, will you?
Oh, I'm going to die.
Thomas!
Oh, dang, Deirdre. I'm afraid I can't cope. I've got to go.
No need, no need. Bedford,
Mom.
Johnson,
look,
round up the other servants and leave the house, will you?
Certainly, dang, Deirdre. Come on, everyone.
Well, that's a lot better.
Some more dip, madam.
Just thought we'd see what's on television.
Oh, thank you so much. What, who is that, Harold?
That looks... stupid set. I was come back on a different channel.
I've seen this movie before. Blood orgy of the senior citizen.
A very hot day. They've had to take their clothes off in order to cool down. And now they're having afternoon tea.
You know what they say.
It's a very strange way to have afternoon tea, isn't it? Continental people. Ooh. Very Fellini, isn't it? Eric Fellini of Launceston.
Hello, this is Wayne Lederhosen for Let's Insult Your Intelligence. As I'm hugging the camera, I'm sure you haven't noticed that I'm standing at the side of the Great Western Highway outside the sleepy township of Munboring, where D.H. Lawrence may or may not have left a boot. Last week, you'll recall that we investigated the amazing courage of a young Nazi MP who spent a week in the night house at Sydney's Taronga Park Zoo disguised as a platypus. Well, this week we look at the question of immigrants and, indeed, should they keep feral animals.
I got a wombat, his name is Fred. He sleeps all day and digs holes in my bed. Wombats don't go much for reading. Fred's no intellectual pup. He won't set the world on fire, but he'd sure like to dig it up.
That's fascinating. Could you enlarge on that last statement, you think?
I got a wombat, his name is Fred.
I understand there's a certain amount of wombat drug abuse about.
He don't smoke ganja, he's so well bred.
Now, a wombat, that's a pretty unusual animal to keep as a pet.
Well, Mike, I tried a budgie, but he wasn't a very good watchdog, and I had a red-bellied black snake, but he just wouldn't beg.
Well, do any particular events stick out in your mind, Mr. Molasses?
Excavating in the backyard, Fred dug up a sacred site. Men from Canberra fenced the yard off. Such is bureaucratic might. But his name is Fred.
He's very attractive, isn't he? Got a lovely coat.
And sometimes I just wish he were dead.
Oh, come on, Mr. Molasses. I'm sure you don't really.
Fred don't live in my house no more.
Well, that's a bit of a surprise, isn't it? Why was that exactly?
It happened this morning about 4:30. Fred was digging in that moonlight. It had to happen, I suppose. Out from his own excavation, a fine young lady wombat rose.
That's very romantic, but where does it leave you?
I once had a wombat whose name was Fred.
Well, don't you think we've covered this already, surely?
But next Tuesday morning, he's going to be wed.
Well, thank you very much, Mr.
A leg break molasses.
Well, we'll be back again in just a few moments after this short break.
And now, Mrs. Juliana Keefe of Oilwell Flats talks about chump.
When I dish it out every day, they all come running and they gobble up every little bit. When you're running a big nursing home like this, you really go for economy. Look at their healthy teeth and hair. Chomp really gives them something to bite into.
So you'd recommend Chomp to other matrons?
Oh, why, yes.
Well, there you have it. Mrs. Juliana Keefe, top matron at Sunnyside Nursing Home, recommends Chomp. When you buy your can of Chomp, fill out the questions on the back about your grandmother, and she could win a personalized feeding dish. Chomp. for happy grannies.
Hello there. Nice to be with you again. And as usual, I'm speaking to you from my surgery here in Drainage Hills. And this week's letter comes from little Deirdre Custard of Refrigerator West. That's not far from me. Nice part of the world, Deirdre. And you write, "Dear Bruce, I am thinking of getting a snake as a pet, but I can't make up my mind what kind of snake I would like. I've thought of getting a brown snake or a tiger snake or even a copperhead, but I'm not sure. Which snake do you think is best for a small home with a small backyard? Thank you for your letter, Deirdre, and what beautiful handwriting you have, dear. Now, I'd just like to leave the question of the snakes aside for a moment, if I may, because reading between the lines, I think your letter is actually about rage. Rage and defiance, Deirdre, and if I can just read a little deeper into it, I think what you're really saying is that you live in a ghastly, cramped suburban home with a very oppressive family atmosphere, and you feel so enraged by the unfair pressure placed on you by your family, and I guess it's Mum and Dad and two spiteful brothers, that you want to kill them. Well, Deirdre, of course, murder is very effective. Death is quite permanent. In fact, it's one of the most final and permanent of all human activities, Deirdre. And, of course, this is why you want the snake. But I wouldn't recommend a snake. No, I think one of those kitchen knives people use for cutting up cat's meat or chopping parsnips up. I think, in fact, sometimes they're called a psychopath's knife. They're pretty good. But in this case, I don't think you should resort to murder. At least not at first, Deirdre. I think I'd try a really bad fright. A 12-gauge shotgun fired into the ceiling at breakfast is very effective. Or you could try running through the house in the middle of the night, shrieking at the top of your lungs and throwing gelignite out the windows. However, if you do decide on the snake, Deirdre, not a brown snake or a tiger snake, get a taipan. Beautiful striped colours, Deirdre. Doesn't eat a lot and utterly deadly. Anyway, I hope I've been of some assistance with your little problem, Deirdre. Now, this is Bruce Lasis saying goodbye till next time, and please bear in mind, animals are only dumb because they can't talk.
Mightier than King Kong, meaner than Godzilla, and more vicious than Skippy. It came from Richie Mulpa. The battle for Perth is over, and Geoffrey the Giant Sheep is on the run. The last-minute deployment of the Army's Special Formation Dance Battalion, the Jockettes, saved the city through a combination of brilliant military tactics and the hokey-cokey. Meanwhile, the rest of Australia is not slow to learn of the ovine threat. Within a matter of days, the news even reaches the country's biggest media organisation, the Australian Broadcasting Collective, which immediately springs into action with a demarcation dispute.
Hands up, all those in favour of the news department covering this giant sheep business, all right? Hands up. Okay, all those in favour of the rural department? Yep. It's a tie. Well, Mr. Chairman, you've got the casting vote. Who gets the job, the news department or the rural department?
Well, frankly, Miss Pat, I really don't know. I mean, I can see the merit in both arguments, because on the one hand, news has little enough to do as it is. But on the other, rural's been very depressed ever since we put Neil all in out to stud. But on the other hand, a case could even be made out for the sporting department, now that the Sheffield Shield has been cancelled and Norman Mayhem's back on his medication.
Meanwhile, the news also reaches the offices of a fabulously successful yet perennially youthful Australian film producer.
Anything of interest on the telex this morning, Adams?
Just the usual, sir. Another begging letter from Kirk. Marlon says he'll do the Bjelke Peterson story for nothing, as long as he can play Flo. And a giant sheep has eaten your Perth home.
A sheep, Adams?
A giant sheep, sir.
Has eaten my...
Your Perth home, yes, sir.
Golly.
If it's any consolation, sir, it's also eaten Alan Bonds.
A sheep? A giant sheep? That's it, Adams!
Yes, sir.
Get me my riders.
At once, sir. Okay, on your feet now, you lot. Come on, the young master wants to see you now. Hurry up, sir. Come on, get him in. Hurry up.
Quiet now. Listen, you lot. We're on to the chance of a lifetime.
A giant sheep is on the loose in Australia, and I want a film made about it. A film with spectacle. A film with romance. A film with thrills. And above all, lots and lots of horses. Now, how about it? Come on, think, think.
Yeah, I've got it, sir. What about the sheep that ate Melbourne?
Oh, no, not dramatic enough. What about the sheep that ate the Melbourne Cup?
Or even better, the sheep that won the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's it. And we'll call it Barlap.
Well, is this the start of a new career for Jeffrey? From monster to movie star. And is it a role he can sink his teeth into? Tune in again for the next exciting episode of It Came From Widgiemouth.
Hi-ho, everybody. It's Bert Grudge here again from Bert's Massage and Tackle Shop with some handy advice about the lures that are most popular this fishing season. Last year's pith helmets and croquet balls have been replaced by a large selection of bow ties. For brim and mullet, most fishermen find the clip-ons rather effective, while trout seem attracted to both the large purple felt ties and the revolving battery type. In the upper reaches of the shoal haven, a few stalwarts have achieved some success by using cravats and boaters as lures. Amazingly, just the other weekend, that great deep-sea fisherman Bob Nibble landed a 300-pound marlin off the coast of Queensland using only a black-and-white photograph of Peter Allen. Other suggested lures from this season's Fisherman's Almanac are New Zealand Prime Ministers, Russell Dry Star Originals, camper vans, and country cabaret acts. Sadly, international lures such as Liberace or Pam Ayres are only productive if used in the shallower waters of rivers like the Murray, and only then if they're used in conjunction with bait such as fresh squid or former Liberal Party backbenchers. But, as I say, with the wide variety of lures now available, a really good season's angling is pretty well guaranteed. Bert Grudge netting them in for slightly out to lunch.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, came a story of good against evil and of chivalry against chronic halitosis. Imperial Echoes! Our story continues as two awesome black cape figures confer on their evil breath star.
May I congratulate you, my friend? Your breath is particularly offensive this morning.
I have been working on a new formula, Your Highness.
And what, if I may be so bold, my friend, is your secret?
Garlic prawns. It is lethal at up to 20 paces.
Hand over that entree dish, Father.
Ah, young wimp Jaywalker. But I think you have underestimated the power of continental cuisine.
Escape the awesome power of the garlic prawns? Can Lord Breather conquer the galaxy with his laser beam breath? Don't miss the next installment of Imperial Echoes.
A man whose radical new techniques can turn any student into a Da Vinci. That's Terry Legarn. Good afternoon, Terry.
Hello.
Well, tell us something about the art school. Is it a collective, a cooperative, or what?
Well, it's neither, Adrian. It's really organised more along the lines of a camp.
A sort of holiday camp, you mean?
No, concentration. You see, artists today are generally products of a bourgeois middle-class consciousness, and it's not really conducive to great art.
A taste for wallpapering, perhaps?
Well, yeah, I suppose you're right, Aid, but as for getting the likes of Guernica or the Raft of a Medusa out of them, well, it's like trying to...
Squeeze blood from a stone.
Exactly. And that's where the thumbscrews come in. You see, great art, as I see it, only comes out of great suffering, and our job at the camp is to provide the best torment that money can buy. Put the pain back into painting. That's our motto.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating, but how does this work in practice?
Well, our basic course ranges from living in squalor one through to starving in a garret and right up to final year tuberculosis. And we've even got one or two students doing advanced alcoholism. They get their DTs next year.
Well, how original. Anything else?
Well, yeah, there's the rack, but that's more of an extension course. And I would like to point out here that all our equipment is the very latest stuff from East Germany, where they've had such great success lately with their abstract expressionists. It's really amazing what some of them are capable of doing once their bones have knitted.
Well, I can see that you're drawing on the latest technology, but have you been able to repeat the same results here in Australia, Teddy?
Well, we're beginning to. But you've got to remember that art is a subtle and a delicate thing.
I do.
It's like a flower. It takes weeks, months, even years of careful nurturing and crossbreeding to produce its most amazing blooms. However, we're hoping that the new Dresden genital clamps will speed up the process.
I see. Does this cost the students much?
No, not really. Most of them don't plan on having families anyway.
Really, I meant financial cost.
Well, it's very much a needs-based fee structure. The more they have, the more they need to give away. Until it hurts, in fact.
Now, what sort of degrees are there?
As the usual. First, second, and third. The latter only being available in our master class.
And what does the master class consist of?
Intense pain, usually. We run the whole gamut with this one. Elementary cuts and abrasions, psychological abuse, tweaking, exacerbation of feelings of inadequacy, a bit of gratuitous disfigurement, kneecapping, lobotomies, and basic colour theory.
And of course the most important thing is, do they get any sort of diploma at the end of all this?
No, not the students, but their families get a nice framed death certificate.
The diamond-studded million-dollar Wattle and Vine Club at Plush Hotel Eureka at sunset and 110th Street, Willow Walla Bangalong, the makers of Azimuth, Peyton, Combined Surgical Truss, and Nose Straightener bring you a program of modern dance music purveyed by Sir Arthur Greenslade and the Willow Walla Bangalong Everglades Serenaders. And now, may it please you, your genial host, Lervis Slage.
Hip, hip, everybody. We'll soon be gliding onto the dance floor. But first, have you noticed that your chauffeur refuses to have you sit next to the driver's seat? Do your friends insist on speaking to you through closed doors? Do you suffer from an enlarged proboscis and nocturnal flatulence? Then you need the benefit of Azimuth's scientifically approved patent combined surgical truss and nose straightener.
Pardon me, pretty baby, is it acne or dandruff or rabies? Pardon me, pretty baby, am I so repulsive to you? Thing I must say, is there some kind of hint in the fly spray? Is my breath like a death ray? Do I seem revolting to you?
He's tried roll-on skin cleansers, mouthwashes, and plain soap. With the fragrance of carbolic, may we still hold out some hope?
There's a favor I would ask. Could you kindly dispose of that gas mask? Getting near's such a hard task when I look repellent to you.
Is it just because my breath is so tainted?
Oh, my God! No, she's fainted.
Am I so disgusting to you?
Yowza, Hot Fiddle and Fritz. Your own John Harper and George Garner. Now the torrid trumpet of bubbling Bob Barnard.
Costello's moaning trombone.
So you see, listeners, the Azimuth Peyton Combined Surgical Truss snow straightener and optional crash helmet is an essential accessory for the man who has everything and the woman who wants more. These facts and figures show why Azimuth scientifically approved Peyton Combined Surgical Truss and nose straightener is recommended by white-coated experts in steel frame glasses, endorsed by Zahar's Tucker Box, and all crowned heads of Europe.
Happy, darling?
I'm so glad you chose Italian for our anniversary, Barry. So romantic.
Oh, konnichiwa, minasan. Good evening, madam. Good evening, sir. Welcome to Pericoloso Spaghetti House. Would you like to order now?
My wife's having the gazpacho, and I'll start with the spaghetti marinara.
Oh, one cold miso soup, one seaweed noodles. Miso tatsu so yakisoba sotsu kudasai! Hai! Now for the main course, we have raw scallopini, raw ravioli, raw tortellini in soy sauce, and raw chicken cacciatore.
I realize you specialize in regional cooking. Isn't there any seafood?
Why, certainly, madam. Raw fish of the day is barracuda, so we also have raw swordfish, raw tuna, raw squid, and raw jellyfish eggs.
That sounds absolutely revolting. I mean, can't you come up with anything in the standard Italian repertoire?
Raw prawns.
Now look, bud, if you're trying to take the piss out of us, there's another perfectly good eatery down the road. Come on, Beryl.
Oh, Barry. You were so clever to find this place. Japanese is so romantic.
Signore, signora, buonasera. Welcome to the Tokyo Geisha restaurant. A little rice Chianti is an aperitivo to start with.
We've been slightly out to lunch with a menu garnished by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, David Witt, Angela Webber, Adam Byrne, Lance Curtis, Peter Smalley, Captain Lamington Superscribes, Alan Hobbs, and Robert Caldwell. Came to Bridgemont was produced by beaming Bob Cubbage. Linda Hughes listened to everyone's problems. Script edited by Mrs. Ford, concerned mother of six. Rover the Duck played by John Farkas. Mr. Edison's talking machine operated by Ron Minogue and Warwick Maver, and the entire meal under the personal supervision of Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin.
Now it's time for Kitty's Corner, and with me today we've got a very special little friend with us. Hello, Edward.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Hello, girls and boys, and welcome to another Silly Billy story time. And if you remember, when we left the Favourite Five, they were just doing very strange pagan dancing.
Yes, they were.
Down by the dam.
Yes. What happened then, Miss Helen? What happened?
Give me another drink, and I'll tell you. Christmas just wasn't the same for the Favourite Five. Since the divorce settlement came through and Auntie Marjorie had had the operation and...
Oh, come on, everybody. We've got to find another adventure.
Yes, but there aren't any, Tommy.
I say, why don't we go and get some cameras and then we can go and photograph Uncle Quentin when he goes and visits Auntie Marjorie, and then we can reopen the whole divorce proceedings and supply new fresh evidence and all that sort of thing.
What a ripping idea!
And then that'll be a scandal, won't it?
And that's where we're going to have to leave Silly Billy's story time for today until Mr. Plod, the plastic surgeon, comes for his next fix.